Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Murder at Queen's Landing by Andrea Penrose, narrated by James Cameron Stewart. Prologue.
Hello?
A sudden gust of wind moaned in answer, its salt-sharp swirls tugging at the shoulder capes of the gentleman's elegant overcoat. He took a tentative step into the narrow alleyway between the unlit warehouses, then drew in a shaky breath as his soft-as-butter Hessian boots sank deeper into the muck.
"I must be mad," he muttered.
But he couldn't afford to ignore the summons, no matter that every bone in his body was howling that what it implied couldn't be true.
One, two...
Wincing at the squelch of every slow, sucking step, Hessian Boots felt his way along the grimy brick until he found the iron hasp of the fourth door. As promised, the massive padlock was unfastened, and the age-dark oak creaked open at his touch. Fear slithered down his spine. It was dark as a crypt inside.
"Would that I could retreat," he whispered,
"to carefree days of sun and laughter, of privilege and pleasure." But there was no going back. The only choice was stumble ahead and try to find a way. A hand seized his arm, yanking him deeper into the gloom. The door thudded shut behind him.
What the devil?
Shh! Hissed his captor, shaking him to silence.
Stay quiet, or you'll get your throat cut.
Hessian Boots felt panic rise in his gorge.
But why? He demanded. What your note implied is...
A swallow.
Impossible.
A laugh, low and mirthless, as a flint struck steel and a tiny flame sparked to life. Flexing his black-gloved fingers, his captor shifted the single candle and pulled a packet from inside his coat.
"See for yourself. I've made copies of enough documents concerning Argentum to prove that what I said is true. Unlike you fancy fork-tongued serpents, the numbers don't lie."
In the flickering light, the oilskin seemed to dip and sway through the shadows, like a cobra about to strike.
Argentum! Ye gods! So it wasn't a bluff. The man knew. "How did you discover all this?" demanded Hessian Boots, keeping his hands fisted at his sides.
He had been told that the venture was a closely guarded secret, known only to a privileged few.
"Never mind. What matters is that you need to stop it."
"But..."
"A ruse.
This was a filthy ruse to destroy all the imagination and hard work that had gone into the venture. Argentum would create a whole new world of opportunities for the future, so, of course, there were those who would try to stop it. By whatever means it took."
"But I can't stop it," lied Hessian Boots. "It's too late for that."
"You had better pray you're wrong," said Black Gloves. Despite the damp chill swirling up from the river, sweat was dripping from his brow, the salt stinging his eyes.
What do you...
A fierce bark suddenly shattered the nighttime stillness, its echo reverberating against the close-set buildings.
"You hear that?
The night watchmen and their hellhounds are starting to make their round." Black Gloves pressed in closer.
"We can't afford to linger."
Hessian Boots felt the packet being thrust into his coat pocket.
"Good versus evil. Read the documents, and then you must decide which side you're on. Trust me, your life will likely depend on your choice."
The flame sputtered and went out, shrouding them in a darkness blacker than Satan's maw. His thoughts were spinning helter-pelter, so it took him an instant to react.
"What do you mean? Who are you?" he demanded.
But a dull thunk and a flutter of chill air was the only answer. After a heartbeat of hesitation, Hessian Boots edged his way to the door and found the iron latch. Pressing his forehead to the dank wood, he gritted his teeth to stop them from chattering.
Damnation! Surely this must be some devil-cursed nightmare.
He squeezed his eyes shut, willing himself to wake, but the prickling splinters against his skin and the foul-smelling mud seeping through his boots were all too real. A hound barked again. The sound roused him from self-pity.
Escape. I must escape.
He wasn't the only one at risk. After easing the latch up, Hessian Boots opened the door a crack and ventured a peek, and thankfully saw naught but a shadowy gloom. Darkness, he realized, was now a blessing, not a curse. Spotting no sign of life, he darted to the corner of the warehouses, and after a small pause, ducked low and ran to take cover among the hogshead barrels stacked by the loading area. The gate where he had entered wasn't far. Another few minutes. But then a blade of lantern light sliced through the thick fog, stirring pale curls of mist. Heart hammering, Hessian Boots held his breath as fear suddenly fisted around his chest.
It had to be a ruse.
His partners had warned him that jealous rivals would seek to stop the venture if word of it somehow got out. Black Gloves had likely passed on falsely incriminating documents in order to foment mistrust and dissension. Or, he forced himself to swallow his terror. Or perhaps there was an even darker explanation. His thoughts began to spin, spectres tangling with suspicions. Nothing was making any sense. It seemed to take forever, but at last the sounds of the patrolling guard faded away, which seemed only to amplify the ominous groans and creaks from the nearby wharves. Rusty metal, rotting wood. Hessian Boots released a sigh as another menacing thought crept into his head. The worn-out bones of those who toiled in endless misery to make the rich even more obscenely rich.
"What a bloody fool I've been," he moaned.
Water slurped against the barnacled pilings, the receding tide giving way to the stench of decay. Hessian Boots slipped free of the barrels and hurried to a narrow cart path that led through another warren of windowless warehouses and out to the side gate set in the dockyard's perimeter wall. Hugging close to the shadows, he quickened his steps.
A right turn, and then a left turn.
A shove knocked him off balance, and suddenly he was falling, falling.
"You can't go that way,"
warned Black Gloves, yanking him upright and pushing him back into the shadows. His shoulder hit hard against jagged brick as smooth, leather-clad hands forced him into a narrow passageway between two windowless buildings.
"They're waiting at the gate," added Black Gloves. "There's another way out. Follow me.
The stone landing ramp can be crossed at low tide." Digging in his heels, Hessian Boots tried to shake loose from the other man's hold.
"Let go of me! I'm not playing any more of your filthy games!"
He fumbled at his pocket, trying to reach the packet of papers and fling it into the mud.
"Don't be daft!"
Black Gloves tightened his grip and pulled him closer.
"Trust me, if we try to leave by the gate, we're dead men."
"I don't believe..."
His words died in a gasp as a dribble of moonlight caught the lethal flash of steel. Black Gloves had pulled a knife and was angling the blade upward.
"Damn you to hell!" rasped Hessian Boots,
fear turning to fury as he heard someone else scrabble into the narrow passageway.
"A trap!"
He lashed out a kick that buckled his captor's knee, then lunged and seized the hand holding the knife. Punching, kicking, shoving, swearing, Hessian Boots was vaguely aware of a third man joining the fray. Friend or foe? Impossible to tell. Reason had given way to the primal, primitive instinct to survive. Steel sliced a gash across his knuckles. Recoiling, he swung a wild punch and heard a grunt of pain. The blade flickered, a quicksilver gleam against the dark blur of bodies. Hessian Boots punched again, and for an instant felt a sticky wetness beneath his fingers, before a blow from behind knocked the wind from his lungs and sent him careening into the wall.
"Run!"
Was it a shout from Black Gloves, or merely his inner voice of self-preservation?
"Run!"
The cry came again. Dizzy, disoriented, Hessian Boots gasped for breath, squinting through the gloom as the two thrashing shadows spun toward him. A strange cacophony filled his ears, the thrum of his own blood pulsing through his veins, amplified by a strange thudding. And then, suddenly, from the maze of warehouses, rose flashes of light, bouncing wildly off the bricks, punctuated by shouts and snarling barks. It was the thought of gnashing teeth tearing at his flesh that roused him. Evading a grab at his coat, Hessian Boots pushed away from the wall and plunged deeper into the passageway, following it blindly until at last he saw a glimmer of lamplight and the silhouette of the stone landing ramp up ahead. Slipping, sliding, he raced across the still wet muck and somehow managed to reach the street.
"Run!"
Gut churning, legs pumping, boots pounding the cobbles, he willed himself to go faster, praying for escape from the hounds of hell snapping at his heels. Chapter 1. "No." The Earl of Rexford gave a critical squint at the waistcoat. "Absolutely not." His valet gave an aggrieved sniff. "You can't mean to attend tonight's gala ball dressed in unremitting black. You'll look like an undertaker."
"You would rather I look like a street fiddler's monkey?"
Tyler bristled.
"As if I would ever suggest something so vulgar."
He ran his hand over the exquisitely embroidered silk.
"This particular shade of cerise, embellished with midnight dark thread, is both stylish and sophisticated."
The Earl made a rude sound.
"Then you may wear it yourself, preferably in the laboratory, when you're cleaning up the most caustic of our chemicals."
"You are an arse," grumbled his valet, "and a fashion philistine."
"And might I point out that you are my humble servant?"
"Not for long, if you insist on having such a boring wardrobe. A man of my rare talents needs challenges."
"Then go to the workroom library," drawled the Earl, "and fetch the book on Benjamin Silliman, so you can read up on his experiments with minerals."
He ran a hand through his hair, earning another huff.
"I wish to see if we can replicate his results with acid on quartz, and then, assuming the results are what I expect, I have an idea I wish to try."
Tyler's look of injured outrage quickly dissolved into one of curiosity.
Acids, eh? Are you perchance thinking of adding vitriolic acid to Silliman's original mix?"
Rexford was considered one of the most brilliant chemists in England, but most of his research was done in his private laboratory as he didn't work well within the hierarchy of London's prestigious scientific institutions. His sarcasm tended to offend people. Tyler, who served as his laboratory assistant as well as his valet, was one of the few people who could tolerate his mercurial moods.
"Perhaps," answered the Earl.
"I'll have the summaries from my reading and all the supplies assembled by tomorrow."
The valet tucked the offending waistcoat under his arm and turned for the dressing room. But after a step, he paused.
"Won't you at least consider the silver and ebony stripe? It has the sort of subtle textures and elegance that Lady Charlotte would appreciate."
Charlotte Sloane. Rexford hesitated and looked away to the leaded windows, where the darkening night shadows were teasing against the glass. A lady of infinite textures, woven of complexities and conflicts, though that, he admitted, was rather like the pot calling the kettle black.
"I don't think Lady Charlotte gives a fig for how I'm dressed for the evening," he replied.
After all, she cloaked herself in quicksilver shadows, and secrets, oh, so many secrets. An involuntary twitch pulled at his mouth. One of the more surprising ones he had discovered was the fact that, having assumed her late husband's pen name, she was the notorious A.J. Quill, London's leading satirical artist. They had first clashed when Rexford had become the subject of her razor-sharp pen. That a high-born aristocrat had been accused of murder had had all of London abuzz. But they had come to form an uneasy alliance in order to find the real killer. Much to their mutual surprise, a friendship had developed, though that was too simple a word to describe the bond between them. It had grown even more complicated over the course of several more murder investigations in ways impossible to articulate, and recently it had taken another twist. Tyler let out a huff, drawing the Earl back from his musings.
"She's a gifted artist and a sharp-eyed observer. Of course she'll notice all the little details that add colour and texture to a blank canvas, or the lack thereof."
Another rude sound.
"So don't blame me if she decides you're a man of no imagination or taste."
"Oh, please, Tyler, don't tease Rex into a foul humour," came a voice from the corridor. A moment later, a tall, fair-haired gentleman, attired in elegant evening clothes, entered the sitting room of the Earl's bedchamber. There was a certain insouciance to the not-quite-perfect folds of his cravat and rake-hell smile.
"Lady Charlotte will be nervous enough making her first foray into a Mayfair ballroom without having to endure his sharp-tongued sarcasm."
Christopher Sheffield fixed the Earl with a wary look.
"Please try to refrain from misbehaving tonight, especially as you tend to do it deliberately."
Rexford raised a brow.
"Are you really chiding me for bad behaviour?"
Sheffield had been the Earl's close friend since their days at Oxford. The younger son of a marquis, he was allowed no responsibilities for running the vast ancestral estates, and his imperious father kept a stranglehold on the family purse strings, doling out naught but a tiny stipend. Bored and frustrated, Sheffield retaliated by drinking and gambling to excess, a pattern of behaviour that did no one any good. His expression pinching to an oddly pensive look, Sheffield crossed the carpet and took a seat in one of the armchairs set by the hearth.
"Perhaps I'm trying to change."
"Well, that calls for a drink," quipped Tyler,
as he moved to the tray of decanters on the side table. Sheffield was very fond of the Earl's expensive brandy. Sheffield dismissed the suggestion with an airy wave.
No, I wish to keep a clear head."
"Are you ill?" queried Rexford.
"Ha, ha, ha!"
Assuming an injured look, his friend slouched deeper into the pillows.
"Actually, I was hoping to discuss something."
He stopped short as he caught sight of the waistcoat Tyler was carrying, and then started to laugh in earnest. The valet fixed him with a pained look.
"Pray, what's so amusing?" "The idea that Rex might wear that!"
Sheffield made a face.
"Ye heavens! It would look like one of those peacocks from the court of King Charles the First. You know, the ones painted by what's-his-name, the flamboyant, good-looking fellow who was a great favourite with the ladies."
"Anthony Van Dyck," suggested the Earl.
"Yes, that's him."
His friend looked rather pleased with himself.
"As you see, I didn't sleep through every lecture at Oxford."
Heaving a long-suffering sigh, the valet stalked out of the room. Sheffield's smirk lingered for a moment, and then gave way to a more uncertain mien.
"I dare say Lady Charlotte is feeling nervous about making her first grand entree into society."
Another of Charlotte Sloane's secrets had recently wrought a great change in her life. The daughter of an earl, she had been disowned by her family for eloping to Italy with a man beneath her station, and then, after becoming a widow, she had dared to forge an independent life for herself within the dog-eat-dog world of the lower classes through talent, grit, and determination. But the recent murder of her cousin, and the arrest of his twin brother for the crime, had forced her to step out of the shadows and back into the glittering world of the beau monde in order to find the real culprit. Rexford moved to the side table and poured himself a brandy.
"I dare say she is."
He lifted his glass.
"You're sure you won't join me?"
A curt wave dismissed the offer. He shrugged and took a swallow, allowing the liquid fire to prickle against his tongue.
"What if it turns out that she hates this new life?"
Sheffield rose and began to pace.
"You know how she despises the hypocrisy and selfishness of the aristocracy. She's already made some small compromises, but she'll have to keep making even more changes to fit into her new world, and—"
His friend gave a troubled sigh.
"And once you change, there's no going back."
"Change is an inexorable part of our existence, Kit," he replied. "With every tick of time, we're moving ever closer to our mortality. Our lives are in a constant state of flux. Try as we may, we can't stand still."
"Thank you. That makes me feel ever so much more sanguine about the coming evening."
Despite the quip, Sheffield looked even more unsettled. The Earl sensed they were talking about more than Charlotte's challenges.
"The idea of change frightens us all, Kit."
"Not you."
His friend came to a halt.
"Nothing rattles you."
"Ah, would that it were so," thought Rexford.
"You have the gift of sardonic detachment," Sheffield went on. "You can laugh at the absurdities of our human foibles rather than find them terrifying."
"Terror is also an inexorable part of our existence," he said quietly. "To claim otherwise means there's no blood pulsing through your veins."
"But how—"
"Don't fret over Lady Charlotte," counselled Rexford,
an oblique answer perhaps to the real question his friend was asking. But Sheffield was a clever fellow.
"She has courage, resilience, a sharp sense of humour." He paused. "Most importantly, she has friends. Terror loses its power when you're not facing it alone."
An odd glimmer seemed to spark beneath Sheffield's lashes.
"Did I just hear you say a good word about the power of friendship and love?"
"Heaven forfend, you must have imagined it."
Rexford quaffed another swallow of brandy.
But getting back to what you started to say a moment ago—'
He quickly changed the subject, having no wish to pursue the topic of emotions.
"'You wish to discuss something?'
"'Yes.' His friend looked away for a moment. "'A rather important matter, in fact.'
"'Ah!' The Earl's lips twitched. "'I take it you've run through your quarterly allowance and wish to borrow some blunt for brandy and revelries.'
Sheffield stiffened. "'I'm aware of my reputation, admittedly richly deserved, as a beef-witted fribble, so you've every right to be sarcastic. But I wish to change.' He drew in his breath. "'And so,' Rexford put down his glass, cursing his rapier tongue, "'and so I have a business proposal to present to you,' blurted out Sheffield, as he pulled a sheaf of papers from the leather portfolio he had tucked under his arm. "'Assuming, of course, that you're willing to listen, instead of falling into a fit of laughter. "'Am I really such an unfeeling friend?' The thought wasn't a comfortable one.
"'Let us go down to the study,' he replied, "'where we may spread out your documents and have a careful look at everything.'
"'Thank you.' Sheffield's look of gratitude made him feel even more like an ass. The Earl led the way down the stairs to a comfortable room filled with carved bookshelves, leather armchairs, and an overstuffed curio cabinet of scientific oddities. The massive desk had a well-used look, its age-mellowed pearwood top nearly invisible beneath the stacks of scientific journals and books on chemistry. Rexford quickly cleared a space for his friend's papers, and then took a seat as Sheffield arranged his documents in several neat stacks before clearing his throat. "'Seeing as we shall soon be capering in a ballroom, I won't dance around the tree. I would like to ask you for an investment to start a business.' His friend gestured at the papers. "'You will find all the details there, what it is, why it will be profitable, the financial projections for the first phase of operation. A pause. And the number of shares you shall receive in the company.' Sheffield tugged a little nervously at his cuff. "'Please take your time in reviewing the material. If you have any questions, I shall endeavour to answer them.' A silence settled over the study, stirred only by the whispery flutter of paper and the muted crackling of the banked coals in the hearth. As Rexford read through the pages, he found himself growing more and more impressed. The details of the business were presented in an articulate and well-reasoned outline, and the projection of profits was quite conservative. All in all, it appeared a very professional proposal. He looked up.
"'I take it you have partners in this endeavour?'
"'Yes,' answered Sheffield. He didn't elaborate. "'Curious,' the Earl replied.
"'Might I ask whom?'
His friend hesitated and averted his eyes. "'I would prefer not to say, if you don't mind.' Rexford couldn't help but raise a brow.
"'Not for any unscrupulous reason,' added Sheffield hastily. "'I think you'll approve of them, but at the moment I'm not at liberty to reveal that information.' "'Very well.'
Rexford decided to respect the request, but then went on to ask some lengthy questions related to the matter of costs and profits and the actual running of the business. He could easily afford the requested investment, but it wasn't a paltry sum, and he knew that if the business failed, his friend would feel ashamed of squandering the Earl's money. Sheffield answered the queries with a calm confidence, showing an excellent understanding of the proposed company, including his own role.
"'Because of my family connections and my entree into society, I've assumed the main duties of raising investments. But I'm also involved in choosing what imports will appeal to the aristocracy.
One of the partners is highly skilled in doing the complex financial...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?